Welcome to JW Community Podcast, where my mum is basically just blabbering on about nonsense.
Thank you, fam. Hello and welcome. I have strangely got men on the show this week. I didn't think me and Lara would allow it, but we've made a concession. But unstrangely, they are still Australians. So I will introduce my fabulous team this morning. Good morning, Lara.
Good morning, Louise.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I am in the Victorian High Country and we have patched in today Jonas and Kale. So I'll let you introduce them.
Oh, okay. Oh, Jonas and Kale. This is an exciting surprise. Good morning, Jonas. How are you?
Good morning, Louise. I'm well, thank you.
Are you genuinely an Australian?
I am genuinely an Australian. However, I did move here from Sweden when I was 6 years old.
Yeah, that'll account for your posh accent then, won't it?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just checking. And we've got Kale as well. Good morning, Kale.
Good morning.
Are you genuinely an Australian?
Huh?
I'll take that as a yes.
I'm just speaking your language.
Oh, okay. Lara will interpret. Don't worry, darling. It'll all become clear.
So, and I must explain to you that, yes, we have got two against two today, so two ladies and two gentlemen. And what I had hoped or will still hope to do is have a third person join us on our panel, if you like. But due to timing, I wasn't able to set that up. So you may or may not find a third person at the end of this session today. But we've got about 20 minutes for each person. And so we're going to start with Jonas today. Now, if I can just introduce Jonas a bit more, and that is that I met Jonas through our Australian and New Zealand page. And what I really noticed about Jonas was that he was a very, I guess, kind. I don't mean to be too sort of generic, but he just came across as very balanced and thoughtful. And I met him at a couple of the Australian meetups, and I just noticed he was really accepting. So that was the thing that I liked about Jonas. And so I've invited him to come along today. And what I'd hoped to speak to Jonas about in more detail, I asked him about a couple of weeks ago if he'd come on to talk to us. And that is today's topic. And today's topic is about being different, identifying with different genders, and also about identifying with different sexualities. And in particular, we're going to talk to the guys today about their sexuality, because I'm straight, so that's quite boring, and therefore I can't really talk much about it. I will talk a bit more about the, you know, female sexuality later on in the podcast, but firstly to Jonas. And what I wanted to ask Jonas was questions about his sexuality. And Jonas, how did you feel growing up as a Jehovah's Witness, which I assume you did? I don't know that much about you. Please tell us.
Yes, I did grow up as a Jehovah's Witness. My parents were also Jehovah's Witnesses, and we moved here from Scandinavia. My father came from Finland. My mother came from Sweden, and they come from an old Jehovah's Witness family. It's in three generations, if that's quite old. And I think, you know, growing up, who, as someone who did come out as gay when they were 20 as well, the interesting thing about it is that you, I think as a Jehovah's Witness, you have a very insular existence, a very insular way of looking at, you know, gay men, gay women, and didn't have any role models growing up, you know, besides perhaps the television. And so unconsciously, you know, I may have been pumping out all of the kind of vibes of being someone who would come out as gay later on. But at the time, I think I was, for a large portion of my childhood, very unconscious of that, until my teens, of course, when, you know, sexuality starts to bloom and I developed feelings for the same gender that didn't resolve itself as something that would just disappear or work its way out. And so I ended up leaving because I'm gay.
So first of all, Lara, you're trying to tell me that Jonas is not available for flirting or marriage proposals.
I did mention you wouldn't work your charms on this one. So
Jonas, did you do that, the thing where you try and force yourself to date sisters to make it all go away?
Oh, no, I did the other thing, Louise. I became a pioneer and a very spiritual person. So I've, which was, I always felt it quite amazing that I was able to, not have any unchaste feelings towards women whatsoever. And I wore that as a badge of of honor, you know, of spiritual honor. So I think in retrospect, I can look back because my teenage rebellion was basically, my parents were quasi inactive. My teenage rebellion was to become a very active Jehovah's Witness and was looked at sort of like, you know, without blowing my own trumpet, you know, was looked up to it in the congregation as a spiritual person and quite a studious person as well. But, yes, I didn't date, any sisters whatsoever. And I'm glad I did, because I probably would have got married at 18, you know.
Like the rest of us. Well, like me, anyway.
Like the rest of us, yeah.
Everybody else except you.
Yep.
My question was going to be, and can I just stop for a minute, because I wanted to say this at the start, which I kind of left out, but maybe now's a good time anyway, and that is, if you're listening to this podcast and you feel this is not the topic for you, I urge you to not switch off and not stop listening, because I want to challenge the thoughts that we sometimes have about an unconscious bias. And so given that it's a new year, it's now 2018, well, not for us yet, but it will be for you when you're listening, I want you to just listen and try and gain some understanding. Challenge yourself to be more accepting than you once were. I mean, if you've already at that stage, congratulations and thank you for being here with us. But if you're not and you're finding this confronting, please listen on so that you can help to connect to people that you know. So, Jonas, sorry, back to you. And so you obviously had it in your mind that there was a certain path that you were going to follow, and all of a sudden puberty stepped in. And you already mentioned, you know, when you turned 18, you perhaps were thinking already about getting married. And so what I'm wondering is, when you were younger than that, as I was at maybe age 11 or maybe 13, something like that, as puberty was starting to kick in, did you have a consciousness about being gay or others being gay, not necessarily yourself? What were your thoughts when you were still in about being gay?
I think that emergence of an understanding of the feelings that I was having and a kind of getting used to that sexual desire was kind of jumbled up with a whole lot of the theology and my expectations of wanting to become a very spiritual Jehovah's Witness. And, you know, I really was. I was very into the religion, whereas a lot of my family, as I said before, wasn't. And so I think I think sometimes what happens is that you know there's a lot of denial that goes on with a lot of gay people, especially like I'm 40 now. This is 20 years ago that I left, and then another 10 years before that, I guess, when that sort of those feelings became apparent, that there's a lot of guilt, there's a lot of shame. And there's definitely something that an awareness of this is not something safe to talk about whatsoever to anybody. And that combination really festered for many years to the point where I became very isolated and extremely introverted, very passive aggressive towards my parents as well. Just knowing full well that there would be no safe outlet for me to even say, look, Mum and Dad, I am gay, without the threat of losing that relationship, which I, to cut a long story short, I did. I lost my parents. Mm. I lost my family. And I knew that would be the outcome of being able to just say this thing, you know, to be able to express this, to say, I can't, you know, I'm not attracted to women, et cetera, et cetera. So what I did instead was this, just waited, because Armageddon was going to come at any moment, so it would solve it anyway. Mm. There was no point in bringing it up or discussing it, because it was just a something that would be cleaned off, you know, like a dirty stain, very quickly. But we all know, like, that's, in my humble opinion, is never going to come. So, like, yeah.
You know, Rutherford said that all women were going to turn into men in the new system. He said that in a... Do you think that would have been a good solution for you, wouldn't it? But
it would have been the easier way.
But in my humble opinion, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, we'll return to the actual story.
So that comes to a question that I think a lot of people do consider, that you have a choice. And so my question is, for yourself, you had that realization after sexuality had developed, you know, after puberty, you realized that. And maybe before you don't realize that, but there's a certain consciousness that you have about the path you need to take. So my question is, were you born that way, or was it a choice that you've made? Because I'm sure you've thought about that yourself, and others would have proposed that to you, perhaps. What's your thought on if you're born that way or if you choose that way of life?
I mean, we were definitely – that was the explanation that we were given as Jehovah's Witnesses, wasn't it? You know, that people choose to be gay. And the answer, of course, is yes, they choose to be gay. But, of course, it's not as simple as making that choice, because for me to make the choice, for me to say I am a gay person – meant that I had to lose my whole family, my whole social structure, my kind of relationship with God or my religion or what have you, or everything that I kind of, my whole world. And most Jehovah's Witnesses who have left, ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, perhaps could sympathize with that fact that, you know, it's not an easy choice to leave all of that. And because I was already wanting to become, you know, very strong Jehovah's Witness, that there was nothing else really that was making me necessarily wanting to leave, that I made that choice to leave because it felt so innate that this is something that I could not control. This is not something that I was just making up or that I was manifesting through, you know, vigorous masturbation all the time. You know what I mean, as they would say. But it was like something that, in fact, I used to, on the watchtower calendar, put an X every time. I think it was like a little M, actually, every time I masturbated, which I think I made it to about 3 months or 2 months or something crazy like that at one stage. And the thing is that it does feel, it is extremely innate. And looking back at my childhood and the way that I behaved, I people who I've spoken to now in the today have said, yes, we could see there were definitely traits there when you were much younger that would suggest that you would end up being gay. That's not something that you orchestrate, is it? That's who you are.
That's right. I think I don't feel that I've made a choice. I feel that I was born that way. But if you say it that way, I mean, I could choose to be gay, but I don't want to live that life. I am not attracted to women. And so therefore, for me, I don't feel it's a choice. I feel, well, I was born this way, but I could have been born that way. And I think this is the challenge for people who are born straight. They often don't think, what if I wasn't born this way? What if I was born gay? Then how would I treat gay people, then how much more understanding would I try and have? Or if I was born bisexual, I've got two members of my family who were bisexual. One still is, and one is, two of them married men actually, but they have had gay relationships and they are bisexual. Now, I don't know that they chose that, and I don't know if they were born that way because I actually haven't asked them, but I know that they have tried it and, you know, their preference has changed. But To go back to your point, that wasn't really a choice. It wasn't really a choice because look how marginalized you become in the religion that you are ultimately happy with, essentially. I mean, you didn't leave because of child sexual abuse, I assume. You didn't leave because you didn't believe in it, you know, everything else. So why would you choose to be something where you had to turn away from the only thing you knew? That would be the point I would
make. Exactly. So, like, you know, for me to say now, it's very comfortable for me to say, yes, I made a choice to leave the Jehovah's Witnesses, which is the more nuanced answer to I chose to be gay. But you're right. You know, it's not something that I chose in terms of just manifesting a sexuality that I could choose then to have a satisfying relationship with a woman, which I don't have any sexual attraction to whatsoever. On the other hand, it's like when I did leave, that sense of rightness and coming of the whole process of coming out as a gay man felt so extremely right and life affirming, and had the total opposite of this, and I had extreme amount of fear of, you know, the outside world, as we did as Jehovah's Witnesses. I thought I would just be kind of like tumbling through a world full of like drugs and immorality and the gutter and et cetera. And, you know, it hasn't been that exciting, to be honest, you know.
I thought that when I left. And when you're a witness, everyone tells you, like, oh, worldly people are always offering you drugs and cigarettes. And I was, like, sat waiting for people to offer me cigarettes and drugs, and nobody did. I felt really cheated.
and the opposite was true. I met a number of gay men and women of many different cultures. Australia's very multicultural, but many different cultures, lots of different ages. Who would just open their heart and their homes and gave me a place to stay. I ran away. I was homeless. And I found the sort of love and acceptance that I had been told I would have from the Christian congregation. And that whole process of leaving was basically to alleviate a lot of pain too. I was at the point. I'm a pretty happy and balanced person at the moment and don't suffer from depressions of any sort, really. But I was suicidal for about a year, you know, and I was at the point where I either kill myself or I leave and God can kill me. So it was like death, you know, anyway. But that making that choice, that was that spark moment where I realized I can make this choice of just leaving, because it's, you've reached the end of your tether anyway. There's nothing else. So it was just that slight little turn towards self-direction, which opened the door and closed the door behind me. And it was my life. It was my life savior, really. And I'm really glad that I left, because I don't, you know, it opened my eyes to as to what the Jehovah's Witnesses were all about in the first place.
I find that fear of death thing is interesting, because when you're in, you're utterly terrified. You're so frightened of everything. And when you suddenly hit rock bottom and you think, well, I'm going to kill myself if I don't leave, so I'm going to leave anyway and God can kill me. And the whole death thing kind of makes you live, because once you think you can only threaten someone with death for so long until they get they think, well, fair enough, just kill me, crack on. And once you've got past that, you know, just kill me now thing, suddenly your life opens up, because you think, oh, well, now I'm dead, I can live a bit. And I find the fear of death threat is too big of a sledgehammer. And when people just pass that, they're suddenly freed. I have a friend who was gay but still attending his congregation in a European country, and he was absolutely terrified of coming out. Although he was already living a gay lifestyle, he was terrified of leaving. He was a ministerial servant in his congregation, and I've kind of lived with him through his process of fading and then not telling his parents and then going, fuck it, I'm going to tell them, and telling them. And that fear, and how the fear has just dropped from him. From when I first met him, he was just utterly terrified of losing everything, to now he's living with a beautiful partner and in another country. and his parents haven't cut him off, bizarrely, and he's left and he's really happy. And I just think, oh, I wish for people at the other side of the fear fence, I want to tell them that at this side, it's not that bad. But I did want to ask you about when you did drop the bombshell on your parents. That must have been really difficult.
Yes, so there was a slow kind of progression where I, you know, look, you know, there was a special dispensation in the late 90s for university education. It seemed to be like, maybe, you know, it's a good idea if you do this, that, and the other. And so I orchestrated this. Well, I started studying at university teaching with the idea that I would become a pioneer with a qualification. And through that avenue, you know, it's true what they say, you know, it really does, you know, really does help you leave the Jehovah's Witnesses. But I started speaking to a counselor, because I had spoken to an elder, and it was boiling up, bubbling up. And I spoke to one elder and I said, look, I'm this, that, and the other, blah, 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 blah. And eventually said, look, you know, I have these thoughts where I feel like I want to kill myself. And he said, You shouldn't feel that way. and then started talking about my sister and her relationship that she was having with some boy in the congregation and changed the topic, which was devastating to a point, but I felt like, okay, I've started this process. Went to another elder and he was much friendlier. He was a friendly elder, but he's basically kind of reminded me of the fact that, you know, even though, you know, what your thoughts and your feelings about, and I confessed to him that my feelings, I felt like I didn't use the word gay, I guess, at the time, but that I was having these particular feelings to the same gender, and that there's nothing wrong with the thoughts per se. The actions are worthy of death, of course, but you're fine. And eventually, because I'd started that process, I went to a counselor. And just when you actually do engage with someone who's a professional counselor, like it's so different. It's so refreshing. You just feel this level of like professionalism and expertise that you'd never had from an elder. And she didn't dissuade me. She just sort of encouraged me to do this, that, and the other. And so she hooked me up with a support group, which looking back at the moment was almost like she went out of her way to link me up with a particular group and to get me into the group, even though I didn't meet the particular criteria, long story, because she saw a really strong particular need. Because when I joined that group, within 2 weeks, I had told my parents, had to run away from home. And so it was just something that's like an unstoppable train at that point of being able to, I need to say this. I need to actually articulate this to be able to integrate it into who I am. But being much younger and less articulate about the process as I'm talking about it now, just wanting to come out. And that's where the door opened for me. And I had met someone through that group, and I had decided to sleep with him, and I did, and it was better than I had ever expected. And that very night I came home, 11 o'clock or so, and my dad was sitting in the lounge room saying, look, you know, we need to speak to you. We need to speak to you. And look, Dad and I had not spoken properly for years, you know, like we were very cold or chilly to each other. And then a very entangled process of me talking to him came out because he had found these pamphlets, very embarrassing pamphlets about, you know, chlamydia and STIs from the health center that I'd gone to, you know, in drawers, which I probably hadn't hidden very well, but my mum had found them. She was crying in the bedroom and I didn't see her that night. And my dad, who was a very strong, big builder, he's dead now, had pinned my older brother to the wall when he was during his rebellious period when he was 18, 19, and I was expecting violence. And he broke down and cried, and his English isn't his first language. It's his third language, you know. And it was devastating to see my father so hurt and disappointed and so unable to integrate that information without the Watchtower's overarching idea of what it means to be gay. And I sat in the bathroom, locked the door, took my Bible in there as if it was some sort of rag that a child holds to get comfort from, and wrote a really long letter and then ran away at like 4 o'clock in the morning. I rang them the next day and they had called the police. It was a whole kind of a very big event, but eventually when that had boiled down and I came back and got my stuff, he was very chilly. My mum was very chilly. I had to give back the car. There was a whole range of things that went down. And from that moment on, it was like he had told my sisters and brothers to just think of me as dead. That was the coping mechanism, was a total shutdown. So the things that I learned from my experience and came into adulthood with, I've never been able to share with them. And that's, I think, a lot of witnesses who leave at an early stage, it's a bittersweet victory, you know, because you come into a sense of maturity that you eventually want to share with the parents, the people that brought you into life, and they're just unable to be there for you.
That is so sad a story, Jonas. I hadn't heard that story before. And there are many things that I can identify with. I also ran away from home. I think like Louise mentioned earlier, she was suicidal, I think you said, Louise.
Yeah, when I was pioneering, not so much when I left, but yeah, when I was doing what Jonas was doing and trying to be a really good witness, I never felt as worthless as those days when I was walking around the streets.
My mother also had the same decision. She was suicidal, and she, same as you, Jonas, exactly. She either had to kill herself or be killed by God, sort of thing. So she left as well. But the thing that comes across from your story is the hurt on both sides, because there was pain on your father's side, his coping mechanism, and I'm sure your mother and probably siblings as well. But there was the hurt on your side, because not only were you leaving the religion, you were not able to share this maturity that you've got with you now. So your pain is, I don't know, double what, you know, ours might have been because of this additional burden that you carried. That's what I want people to hear in your story.
You know, and in a lovely scenario, like, then they would, you know, come around and they'd be supportive and it'd all go full circle. But then I know there are ex-Jehovah's Witnesses who are gay who have got contact with their parents, and I know it's the same for a number of straight ex-Witnesses as well, but who aren't able to really share their family or share their experience with their family at all, or accept that, have their partners accepted, or to even bring up the conversation. It's a kind of becomes a taboo blacked out area or a black spot that never gets addressed fully in it. And in some respects, look, you know, my dad's dead and my mum's, I've reconciled the fact that we're not going to have a relationship. There is, I have let go of the hooks of wanting that, I guess, but that's always, I think, difficult to do in some respects.
Yeah, intellectually you can tell yourself to let go, but emotionally, even though you know it's easier to let go, it's not always easy. You know, it's sometimes like New Year's Eve or Christmas Day, you want your family to be around, and so you might have said, okay, let that go. But if you allow it to creep in that you want your family around, it can be quite painful. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about was, so, and maybe Kale as well shortly, is that level of innate discrimination that we grow up with. So, I mean, this is not, I guess, just the Jehovah's Witnesses, just the Watchtower teachings, but there is an innate discrimination that you grow up with the Bible. And that is that in my childhood, being gay just wasn't on the agenda. It just, I didn't understand it. I didn't know what it meant. I meant that it was wrong, that it was bad, but I didn't actually get it, you know, just as a, I guess, part of growing up, part of life. I just didn't really understand it. And so I knew that, you know, there must have been people at school who were gay, but I just didn't, it just didn't compute in my head, I guess. And so I wanted to just briefly talk about, so you've covered how you felt when you were growing up and how you were in, and then how you came out two times. You came out of the Jehovah's Witnesses and you came out of to be homosexual. But what about that innate discrimination? You mentioned before about people just accepting you in the world, you know, they gave you a place to stay. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe how it was you growing up, and then maybe how you're still affected by that discrimination that is disappearing really quickly in our society? But can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. It's one of the revelations that comes about when you're able to look back at your experience as a Jehovah's Witness is just how bigoted you actually were. And because you're sold this idea that you're the happiest and the best and the most moral people on the planet. And yet people had no compunction to make fun of gay people constantly, all the time. And it was with all the pejoratives involved as well. You know, all the words that are used to describe gay men and women in a nasty way were flung around left, right and center without a sense of it actually being unchristian or not, that was not something that you were treated another human being. you know, because, you know, growing up in that situation yourself, you internalize those feelings towards yourself. And that's the, I think, the main thing that I would really love people who haven't had this experience to understand, that it's not as just as simple as going, I'm gay and accept me. It's I'm gay. I need to accept myself. I need to be able to live, physically live, and then I need to socially live afterwards as well. And as a human being, I have the right to have a happy life and to seek that out, to have love and relationships in my life as well. And that move away from the witnesses for me was a move towards life, I realized in the end. The things that make life worthwhile are these very fundamental things that some people can, who stay in the Jehovah's Witnesses and don't have a particular anything to make them ever want to leave, can still get within the Jehovah's Witnesses. I could not get that. If I wanted to stay in the Jehovah's Witnesses, one of the good things about the discrimination was that there was no way that I would go back after being disfellowshipped, because everybody knew then. You know, it's not like smoking a cigarette or fornication of the straight kind. I'd be marked as everyone would know, and it would be shameful, extremely shameful. So to move away from shame towards, I guess, the rhetoric in the world has been pride, gay pride. Now, there's a reason for that, because it needs to be resurrected in the person who is gay. They need to feel a sense of pride in their life, you know, from shame to just feeling normal to actually being proud of who I am. And I'm proud of being gay in that respect. And that's something that you almost weaponize your life in some respect by saying, I am proud of who I am. And if you are just, if people discriminate against me, then that is their problem. You know, I'm an adult human being who makes the decision to be intimate with other male adults in a consenting sexual fashion and enjoy my life. It feels right and morally, it feels morally right for me.
That's a beautiful way to describe your feeling, because it, I don't know if you've ever heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Sure,
but
sure.
It's like a triangle, and you know, one of the fundamental building blocks of this triangle is love, and so you can't live without love, and that bigoted way that we grow up with just blocks out a component of society that we don't want to happen. That doesn't feel right. It's not good, and it doesn't allow you to live. So it's just not right. So thank you for explaining that.
Yeah, and I mean, like on the outside world, I guess I've protected myself and moved in circles where I will be able to be accepted. University, I've worked many years in one of my jobs as in a sexual health center. You know, I've been validated and understood, and that's been good for me. I can understand that now. I live in the inner city of Melbourne. It's you know, in terms of the marriage equality vote that just went through in Australia, it is had a very high percentage, 80% yes vote to marriage equality recently in the suburbs that I was living in. And that makes me feel like I live in a good place, and it's miles away from where I was, which feels like a backward way of living now to me, and a bigoted way of living, and a closed mind.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm embarrassed to say I did not comprehend this, and I'm going to be 46 next year. I did not fully comprehend this before the last 12 months. How embarrassing is that? Because I had never put myself in your situation, and I told you this a couple of months ago. I actually said to you, I'm kind of embarrassed to be this person who did not have this realization until so late in age. And if it's happened to me, it's going to be happening to other ex-Jehovah's Witnesses as well. And so that's why we wanted to have you on, so that we can hear from your perspective and put ourselves in your shoes and think about it, you know, identify with you, get a connection with you, and challenge ourselves to think about this subject differently. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. Cool.
So, Cale, where do you identify there?
Well, I suppose...
That's what I'm supposed to ask these days. How do you identify yourself?
And this is where I kind of throw a spanner in the works, because I don't particularly like to be labelled as anything other than Cale. And I think that a good, something analogous with the way I feel would be, I can't remember where I saw it, but there was an interview with Morgan Freeman and they were discussing, racism. And the interviewer said, well, how do you expect that we end racism? And he said, Morgan Freeman said, well, let's stop talking about it. You stop calling me a black man and I'll stop calling you a white man. We're just men. And that's kind of how I feel about the whole sexuality spectrum and all that sort of thing. I'm not really interested in putting labels on everyone. I will just do what I want and keep everyone guessing.
Okay, because recently at a meetup, so this is about 3 months ago, I met with someone who had been a lesbian and was now married to a straight guy. And she said to me that the question you should always start with is, how do you identify? With which do you identify yourself? And so now I've got it wrong already.
No, you haven't. Most people do prefer that. I'm just
a bit
weird.
Isn't that like saying, who do you sleep with? I think that's a really personal question. Like, hi, my name's Louise. Who do you like sleeping with? Oh, hang about. We've only just met. I don't think we need to know how people identify. Like, how tall are you? What colour is your hair? I think I'm with Cale. I think it should be a non-discussion. I think you should just get to know someone, and if you like them, you like them, and if you think they're a knob, then don't speak to them again.
Pretty much. And I mean, as Jonas was saying before, like, the queer that comes at the end of the entire alphabet, from what I've always understood, it's kind of like an umbrella term. Wherever you fit, whatever it is, you can just say that you're queer. So I suppose if I was absolutely forced to, I would have to use that word. However, I find it entirely irritating because the word literally means weird. So, like, I don't know. It's not one word that I'm very likely to...
Well, welcome to my world. I'm left-handed. And the word literally means sinister. So suck it up.
Oh, right.
But actually, nobody asks me how I identify with my hands. It's not the first question, oh, are you left-handed or right-handed? Because, you know, your lefties are a bit sinister.
Yeah, never trust a lefty.
Yeah, exactly so. Can you tell us about your journey? Were you raised as a Jehovah's Witness, Cale?
I absolutely was. Born and bred, third generation.
Not as well.
So tell us about how it was for you.
Well, for me it was a little bit different from other experiences I've heard from people. The weirdest thing is I never knew that, well, I guess it's kind of similar to some of what you were saying before, but I never knew that gay was an actual thing. Like, I thought, like, for example, one of my mother's favorite bands was Freddie Mercury. I mean, huge Queen at the top of that, literally. But, the lyrics to, he used to sing, too much love will kill you. And mother used to say, oh, yeah, except he got confused. He didn't know what love was. He's talking about lust. And I was like, oh, okay. So basically what I grew up believing was that being gay wasn't really a sexual orientation so much as it was something that any man would do if they were depraved and disgusting and, you know, basically... we can't really swear, can we? Okay, just do anyone that moves kind of thing, you know? So I didn't see it as a thing. And when I started to have same-sex attractions, I didn't even entertain the possibility that I could be gay. It was just sinful desires like any other sinful desires one might have. Mm. So I just squashed it down to the back of my mind and ignored it. And then again, this is why I don't really particularly like labels, because I'm not really quite sure where to put myself. But I ended up getting married when I was 20 to a beautiful woman who I actually did fall in love with. I loved her very, very much. And we were married for 7 years. And throughout that time, those feelings still happened, but I would, you know, masturbate, whatever. And then just the second it was done with, you know, just back to the back of the mind, doesn't exist, didn't happen, not real, ignore. Ignore, ignore, ignore. And, yeah, so I don't know. I would say we were happily married for 7 years because we had a lot of great memories and a lot of great times together. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't guess it hearing my story, but in the end, she had an affair and left me. So then I was suddenly alone, and I'd been out. I should rewind a little bit. When we got married, we were doing the dirty well before that. I got to the point where, like I think Louise was saying before, well, God's going to kill us anyway. We're all going to be slaughtered. So who really cares? I'm going to die either way. And then I thought to myself, well, I might as well see if all of these apostate lies are what they're cracked up to be. So I hopped on the internet, did a little bit of Googling, and what do you know? Those lies weren't really lies, and they made sense. So I told my wife about it, and we got out of the religion together. And we remained together for 7 years until she had her affair, and then we split up. And then I was suddenly left all alone. And so it was kind of like it was delayed because I left the religion and I lost the whole family and everyone, but I had her. And so things sort of just went as status quo for us until she left me. And then all of a sudden I was on my own with my hands sort of out. Well, what do I do now? And that's when I started experimenting and actually, indulging in the thoughts that I'd suppressed for so long.
Wow, that's really different. So you didn't, as a teenager in the cult, that I call it a cult, you didn't have those feelings that you had to suppress at that time, because you just naturally found each other, and so I guess you kind of just, you know, morphed, I guess, into, you know, being in love with her and looking at that side. You didn't really have this, I guess, dichotomy within yourself as we understand a lot of people do have it at a young age. Is that right?
Well, no, I mean, I suppose to some degree it might have been there, but like I said, I just squashed everything down so deep that it's like, people wouldn't necessarily believe it, but you can actually squash something so much that you don't even know it about yourself. It's like just a reflex that the brain learns to do.
I get that, because I've put my memories of my childhood, I squashed them down so much that I can no longer remember a lot of them. So I actually really do get that. And I think a lot of people listening would actually agree with you. They've had probably the same thing, you know, thoughts that they've suppressed, memories that they've suppressed, you know, friendships and relationships. That, you know, like Jonas said before, they just let go, you know, let the hooks out, if you like.
So
then, Cal, it was kind of a little bit easier for you, but it still couldn't have been, you know, just smooth sailing. So talk to us a little bit more about maybe some of the challenges you have. And I know you don't want to label yourself, but given the discussion today is talking about sexuality and identity, and maybe just thinking about some biblical things that you remember or some ways that your family has treated you since, what kind of comes to mind about your feelings and thoughts?
Well, first of all, the family, they haven't treated me since. They've never spoken to me again, which is a bummer, because being third generation, that includes cousins, uncles, aunties, grandparents, literally everyone. So that's been a challenge, but it's also been a challenge that, and I have to say again, kind of like what Jonas was saying earlier, it's really unpleasant that you grow and you mature into the person that you actually know yourself, you finally understand who you are, and you can't share that with your parents and be kind of like, hey, I know a little bit about what you were going through as an adult, and I was a kid and I didn't understand and I backmouthed you and et cetera, et cetera. And you finally grow up and realize who you are, and it would just be nice to have that sort of connection with them. And the same is true for my sexuality. As far as I know, they don't know anything about it, because they never stuck around long enough to know who I would, you know, grow up to become. So I guess that's the really disappointing thing, that they just can't put aside their just destroyingly strict doctrine for 2 seconds to have a conversation with their son.
Yeah, it's a real block. I think that's how I think of it, is they'll just switch off before you can switch on the conversation. And I certainly feel that that's the way I grew up. I feel I didn't really understand the whole identity thing, and I didn't really understand how it was making other people feel who might not be straight. I just didn't understand how they could feel, because I never put myself in their shoes. And even though we have 2 bisexuals in the family that I know of, they're just the ones I know of, you know, I never thought to ask them about it or to talk to them about it or to even try and understand what they were going through, you know, before or after. When things were problems, we just overlooked it and kept going. We didn't stop and talk about it as a family. And I really think you're a bit luckier than us, Kale, because you're a bit younger. I think you're younger, but to have been married and then for such a long time, you're older than I thought you were.
I get that a lot. I'm 32.
Wow. You and Jonas look so young. It's incredible. But your age group, Kale, and, you know, in Joe's age group, Louise, they're growing up so differently these days.
Yeah, differently. My daughter's 20 now and she's at uni, but when she was at college, they're all so easy with themselves and their sexuality, and the boys are very tactile with each other in an easy way, not in a strange way. And it's so nice to see them. Like, she went to what was a boys' school, but they opened it up for the last 2 years to girls. So they were like mainly boys then. She said, oh, they all just like pile on each other and sit on each other and hug each other and in a non-ironic way. And I just thought, oh, it's so nice that they're able to be so accepting. And she'll come home and say, oh, so-and-so's gay, or my friend, she's going out with a girl this week. And there's no big deal about it. It's barely a topic of conversation. And I think that must be so much better to live where it's not an issue.
Yeah. It's refreshing, isn't it?
It is. It is. And actually, like, when I was in high school, it was still an issue. And kids are just so incredibly sensitive at picking up on things, sometimes even more so than adults. Like, I got bullied throughout high school for being gay, even though I didn't know I was gay yet. And, or didn't even know, like, just terribly. And I was actually invited to a colleague's place for Christmas, because he thought it was terrible that you shouldn't have nowhere to go. So he invited me over for Christmas, and his little brother is gay, and he's in high school. And I said, so what's it like now? You know, like, how do you get treated? Are you bullied for it? And he went, no, why would I be? And I was like, wow, the world really is changed.
And Kale, I would like to hear more about part of your story, but I want to take a little bit of time out to just talk about again the Bible and how it feels, how it kind of instructs us in the innate discrimination that the Jehovah's Witnesses have. And so one thing I saw in the last 6 months on some of the support groups is normalizing sexuality. And let's just talk for a moment about plants and animals. So if we put humans to the side, I mean, I see this kind of stuff on the support groups supporting LGBTIQ people, that is, plants and animals can be hermaphroditic. So, for example, you know, Nemo, Louise, I know you would have watched this again and again and again. Nemo is a clownfish, and clownfish can be hermaphrodites. So that is, they can swap sexes. And lots of other plants and animals are as well. So moray eels, for example, wrasses, you know, they're a really colourful tropical fish. They can swap sex. And actually we were just Googling before this podcast, and my partner and I found a whole lot of things, plants and animals, that can swap sexes and can start off one sex and then swap back to the other, or they just, depending on their temperature, they come out. You know, turtles, if they're warmer, come out as a male, and if they're cooler, come out as a female. So I would like people to think that it's normal in the biological world. So if with that in mind, that it's normal in the biological world, so back to Kale or Jonas, I'm interested in the support groups. Have either yourself or Jonas seen other ways that people can help to normalize for themselves sexuality so that they're not so hung up on what it says in the Bible, but thinking about biology? What's normal?
Well, I mean, what's normal for animals isn't always necessarily normal for humans. So I'm not too concerned with animals changing their gender per se, but I think that humans should basically do whatever they want so long as they're not harming anyone else. That's always been my general rule, at least so long as I've not been a Jehovah's Witness when I was an incredible bigot, as was everyone around me.
But Jonas, does that come to mind for you? Anything that you've read in the support groups that you think can help others to normalize being LGBTIQ? What do you think helps them from support groups?
I can speak from the position of the group that we're in, the Australian and New Zealand group, which I think has about 500 members. A lot of people say how supportive it is. And I was on the moderation team for a while. And of course, there's issues that arise, but on a whole, people are very supportive and are there to support each other. And I think just by having that as a framework of, I'm going to step back and understand and let people be who they are. You realize, and I'm very fascinated by diversity as well. Like I really love watching people and listening to people in their kind of being themselves. And to see, I think in a group like that, where Australia and New Zealand, it's quite a large area, come from all over the place, have many different life experiences and are quite diverse in that respect. Yet there are these innate commonalities of us coming through the Jehovah's Witnesses and out the other end. And I think that solidarity is something that you can carry on further into helping yourself understand what it may be like for a gay person or an Australian Aboriginal person or someone who's gone through a divorce or lost their parents through death or through shunning. Just what it would be like listening to people, I guess. And then you see their families and how much pride they have in their relationships, and letting people flourish in those situations is the key, you know. And it opens your eyes just to how many, for example, gay, lesbian, bisexual people there are. Probably if you did a cross section, it would probably be the same as the general population in the group, and breaking down the stereotypes of what you think gay and lesbian people would be like. You know, obviously there's always some truth in stereotypes as well, but you know, I have children with a lesbian couple. People live lives is very kind of boring. I was about to say accountants, but like I'm not saying that's like, you know, people have very kind of staid lives. People have very kind of exciting lives. I think it's really good just to let people be themselves and watch and learn and accept.
Yeah.
Across the board. Like, it's not your life to make decisions for. The best thing you could do is just support.
I was just going to agree with Jonas there as well. Like, when he said, okay, obviously the stereotypes are there. However, you really don't know. Like, I've spoken to people before and they're like, oh, I can pick out a gay guy anywhere when they're flouncing around, flicking their wrists, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's the illusion. You think all gay people behave that way because they're the ones you recognize. But you don't know that 10 others have passed you in the street and you just couldn't pick them out. You know, it's like that we're actually an incredibly diverse group of people. They're just the ones that you guys spot, you know?
Yes. I cannot spot lesbians very well. You know they talk about a gaydar?
Yeah, I don't have one.
You think... No, and you think that they're all wearing denim with short hair. And they're not. You know, the lady that I'm thinking of right now has very long hair and she's very feminine, so you don't know. And I don't know what stereotype she fits into. But yeah, that going back to that point about letting people be who they are and understanding that not everyone's a stereotype.
Yeah.
Also just I think what needs to be said is we need to ride the waves. And so what I mean by that is people go through different phases. So right now or earlier, Kale, you talked about, well, you were happily married and then, you know, you realise you might be Q, or you might not be. It sounds like you are Q, but you don't want to be labelled as that. Then, Jonas, you talked about with your maturity, now you would like to share that. And, Kale, as your maturity is developing, you want to share that too. So people are going through waves through their life in 5-year increments or 10-year increments. We learn more and more about ourselves every year. And so as people are listening to this, and as you're maturing back at home listening to this, challenge yourself to think about people in a different way. Let them be who they are. Love them anyway. What if it was you? What if you were born that way? How would you be treating people? If you're the grandparent of someone who's gay, if you are the aunt of someone who's bisexual, if you are a child of a transsexual, think about them differently. They don't have to be put in a box like we think that we have to do with these labels. You know, maybe they don't need to be identified, but just consider them as an individual. And that's what I was hoping that we'd get across today. Now, there was something I wanted to tell people about you guys. And you've already displayed your poetry, Jonas. You are a very poetic writer, even though I don't think you're a poet, but you're a very poetic writer. And you speak that way as well. But we didn't get to hear enough from you yet, Kale. And I'm very keen to let people hear how you express yourself in your writing. So I know you're embarrassed to do this. And Louise doesn't know I'm going to ask you to do this. But I would very much like for people to hear what we think is your best piece of work. So far, you have more to deliver. But you've written this beautiful piece called We Are Fish, and it doesn't necessarily relate to today's topic, but I want people to know you, in this instance, as a writer. So would you do us the honour to read out your piece of writing?
I would be happy to read it. However, everyone should know that I'm rubbish at talking. Writing's my forte, but I'll do the best I can. This is a piece I wrote that I felt I was inspired by my experiences as a ex-Jehovah's Witness and by the experiences of other ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. And what I've really noticed is that current Jehovah's Witnesses think that we're absolutely bonkers when we try to talk about how terrible the religion has been for us. And I think that's where a lot of the time they come to the conclusion that we're lying or we're making things up, because they honestly can't conceive that it's so terrible. And so this piece was inspired by that thought, and the way that I think that although being a Jehovah's Witness is damaging, leaving the Jehovah's Witnesses can be more so. So anyway, I'll just start from the beginning. We are fish. Many Jehovah's Witnesses cannot understand the angst of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. They can't understand the anger, the malcontent, the outrage at the way we've been treated. Many current Jehovah's Witnesses perceive ex-Jehovah's Witnesses as liars, over-exaggerators, and monsters. Why? Why is it that we, as ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, can have such an entirely different perspective on our experiences with the religion than those currently living in it? How can we say it was horrible, whilst they say that it was the most wonderful way to live? I believe that it's because the greatest damage is done, or at least noticed, when you leave. We are fish. We are fish with hooks in our brains. Some fish swim about their lives, eating morsels, when one day a hook sinks deep into their brain. Other fish have a hook in their brain the second they're free from their egg, a hook brought into them by their parents, already hooked. The fisherman is a silly old bastard, half drunk and sleepy in the afternoon sun. He doesn't always know when he has a fish on the line, so the fish go about their days with hooks in their brains. They're quite unlike the other fish, who look at them suspiciously, with great shining rods sticking up out of their heads, but, for the most part, they feel as though their lives are somewhat ordinary. You are Jehovah's Witnesses, with hooks in your brain. You swim about your day, you eat like the other fish, you sleep like the other fish, you defecate like the other fish. But you have hooks in your brain, you just don't know it. The true damage of being a Jehovah's Witness is when one day you wake up, or at least the fisherman does. He yanks hard on the rod and you are reeled in. Chunks of your brain are torn out as your flesh splits and scales spiral into the grey sea. Your family scatters, hooks in their brains, praying that they aren't too reeled in. On your journey to the surface, you are waking up. It's not something you can control or undo. Oh, how much easier it would be if you could have just kept on swimming with the hooks in your brain. You'd never be free, but at least you could have functioned. You would have been odd to the unhooked fish, but you'd have felt normal. But now, oh, now the damage is done. Everything you thought you knew is torn out. Chunks of your brain go missing. Your school of family and friends lost. Yes, a great deal of damage was done when you were a fish with a hook in your brain, but you only truly appreciate it when you're torn to the surface when you wake up. That's why ex-Jehovah's Witnesses see so much more than current Jehovah's Witnesses, because the true horror of what has occurred is amplified exponentially when the hooks are torn out. The fisherman only fishes for sport. He throws you back. Your face is haggard. Your head is half collapsed. The fish with hooks won't come anywhere near you, repulsed by your appearance and fearful of a shared fate. The free fish stare at you in wonder and bewilderment, wondering how you ever allowed yourself to become hooked in the first place. You hide away. You hide under rocks. Your head is half collapsed. You wonder how you will ever be a normal fish, knowing that you never will. You hide under rocks. Occasionally, you glimpse out your disfigurement to the Black Sea, hoping for your father, praying for your mother, a friendly face, anyone. But you have been discarded. Your deformity is too great for the ones you hold most dear to lay eyes upon you. They know the rock beneath which you hide, but have already decided you're dead. They blame you for the damage the hook did, the hook they guided you toward to begin with. They condemn you for the calamity you remind them of could be theirs, should they ever wake up, the fishermen. But, yes, but you smile. Although you hide beneath rocks and swim in deep shadow, you smile, for you are free.
Beautiful.
Wow, what a fantastic piece of prose to end on. I've seen that shared all over Facebook. I didn't realise you'd written it, Kale. That's fantastic.
All right, thanks.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It's really good. Well, I think that is a fitting end to a really thought-provoking podcast. And thank you, Lara, for, as ever, organising me to get these podcasts done.
Thank you for having us. Can I say, Louise, and this, I've got a request for a song just before you let me go.
Oh, yes, please.
And this song has been requested by Kale, whom you just heard read out his piece of his writing. And it's called Hurt by Johnny Cash. You might know it.
No, I don't know.
Yes.
Okay, but listen to the words, because when you hear it, it's talking about hurt from a different perspective, of course, but we can use it from our perspective. This is not a negative podcast. This is not meant to make you feel depressed. And although the song is called Hurt, the idea is that you now reflect on what these gentlemen have told you, and that you listen to the words in the song about the hurt that can happen on your side and also on your family's side or your friend's side. You may have discriminated in the past. You may have been a bigot before, but stop today. Consider it from their perspective. And please don't cause any more hurt. So listen to the words. Think about this podcast. Thank you for sticking with us. And make tomorrow a different day. Thanks, Louise.
Thanks, Lara, and thank you, Jonas and Kale. It's been really great talking to you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I wear this crown of thorns upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else, I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down.